Ladies and gentlemen, relatives and parents of the class of 2011, particularly mothers today, though your day falls on the same day as this commencement exercise, we wish you well and trust this will be a special day for you, and particularly the class of 2011. My congratulations for 4 years of hard work, for some of you five, but we're glad that you, we're glad that you have made it. My name is Koheleth, and you have probably wondered where I got that particular handle, where I got that name. The word Koheleth, the name Koheleth, simply is a Hebrew word for teacher, instructor, philosopher, lecturer, and that is exactly what I will be doing today over these next 35 or 40 minutes that you are here. We have a lot to cover, and there's a lot that I want to say. I am particularly thrilled that I could be your speaker at this commencement exercise. I have kept a journal of my life. You have already heard that my resume, as your president has introduced me, that I have the privilege of being known as the wisest man who has ever lived, the wealthiest man who has ever lived, and the man who has experienced the most pleasure, which is what my wisdom and wealth has afforded me. And so it's only obvious that since I embody the American dream, that I would be the person that would come and address this astute student body and graduating class here today and family and friends. So we're delighted that you're here. I have a few things that I need to say before we even launch in and get started. The first thing that I want to say is this. I am not going to give you the party line. I'm not going to do what many commencement speakers are doing across the nation. I'm not going to tell you what you want to hear. I'm going to tell you what you need to hear. I'm also going to tell you this. There are going to be things that I say that you are not going to like. You are going to really have trouble with. And it won't be just the graduating class, the seniors that are here getting ready to get their diploma in a few minutes. But it's also the faculty that will be somewhat riled today. But I want you to do me this favor. Wait till I get to the conclusion of the matter before you decide what the conclusion of the matter is. We will get to it. But in order to get there, I have to give you a little background. And I have to say some hard things. But they're truthful things, as hard as they may be. I have been around the block a lot. I'm getting older. The sand at the bottom of my hourglass is a lot more than at the top. So I have some things to say. And I really want you to listen hard to what I have to say. I'm here to tell you some things that are a bit shocking. They're going to go against the grain of much of what you have heard. I'm not here to challenge or spar with the professors that are here that have taught you. I'm only here to tell you, as your guest lecturer, what I've discovered about life. And I think it's going to be a little bit different than many of you think you've discovered. My hope is that when I'm finished, you will see things the way I see them. Because I think deep down, those of you that have lived any length of time will say, he's right. I don't like to admit it, but he's right. So here's what I've done. I have this journal that I've kept all through the years, and the title of my journal and the title of this message is Under the Sun. And in my journal, I use a number of expressions, things that people aren't necessarily familiar with, but I think I want to give you some definition here. I want to talk about vanity. And you're going to hear me say things about vanity. You know what that is. It's the idea of empty. Worthless, of senseless. In some expressions, it actually carries with the idea of things that just simply go up like a vapor, smoke. I want to talk to you a little bit about the idea that life is crooked, and we'll talk about having a difficulty trying to make it straight. So we're gonna talk about that. So when we use some of these expressions, I want you to know what they mean. Another expression I'm going to use is chasing after the wind. Sort of trying to grab a hold of something and you never really quite can get your hands on. Chasing after the wind. Then there's one final expression, again, which is the title of my message, under the sun. And I won't give you a definition of that until we get to the very end of my talk today. So again, many hard things that you'll struggle with. Some of you are going to want to actually come up out of your seats at me. Hold off. Wait till the conclusion of the matter before you think you know where I'm going with the matter. Okay, now that we have the ground rules, I believe I can start. I have broken my message down, my lecture, my talk, into three parts because it sort of is the reflection of my life. I want to talk about wisdom, and I want to talk about wealth, and I want to talk about pleasure. As a matter of fact, a number of you have come to this commencement exercise that really have no relationship to any of the students. You just heard that I was coming, and you thought, wow, I really want to hear how to be wise, how to have lots of money, and how to experience all the pleasures of life. So I know a number of you have sort of snuck in here. That's okay. That's all right. I know the faculty has wanted the same thing. Yes, I am in considerable demand, but sometimes I only speak at a place and am never invited back, and you'll probably know why when we finish this particular message. But again, I remind you, do not arrive at a conclusion until I've given you the conclusion of the whole matter. Well, as I look down at my journal here, there are a number of things that I've written, and some of them have surprised me as I've gone through life. Every day I will sit and I will record things. And as I look over my life, I've recorded some things here that I say to myself, if I only had have known this when I was younger, I could have saved myself a lot of heartache, a lot of pain. And so for the young people that are here, for those that are graduating, I really hope that this will be a great encouragement to you. And so I want to start with the first part of my three-part outline. I think almost all messages need about 3 points, because if you have much more than that, people forget. And so I want to zero in on what sort of defines my life. And the first thing is the subject of wisdom. And here is what I have written to myself in my journal, in the privacy of my own journal. I've arrived at this conclusion regarding wisdom. With much wisdom comes much grief. With much knowledge comes much sorrow. And you're sitting here and you're thinking, where's he going with that? How could that be? We came here to this university to learn as much as we possibly can. We've spent an awful lot of money. And now this man that has lived out the fullness of life is here to tell us that wisdom brings much grief. Why would that be? Well, I'm not going to leave you without an answer to that. I will tell you why that will be. You see, the person that is very wise will die just like the fool. He may not live any longer. He may not. But he's still going to die. He's still going to go into the grave. And you're going to respond by saying, yes, but his life will be much better. The wise person will have a much better life. Really? Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe there will be a curveball, something that is crooked that can't be made straight, that will be thrown their way, that ruins their business. And all of their wisdom that they thought would bring them all this has dashed all their hopes upon the rocks of misfortune and hurt and pain. How do you know that with all of your wisdom and all of your knowledge that the business you built, and now you're ready to retire, you're ready to sit back and relax, and then something strikes you physically. And then even that you realize that all of your wealth is simply going to be passed on to somebody else who may not handle it the way you want it handled, and yet you're the one that earned it. You see, really, it's all vanity. It's senseless. It's worthless. You can have all the wisdom you want, but here's what I've found. All it does is bring much grief and much pain and much sorrow. Because eventually the fool will probably wind up with your money. You will have worked very, very hard, and the fool may go down and buy a lottery ticket and win more than you've ever, ever dreamt of. And everything seems to go his way. But he's still going to die the way you do. As a matter of fact, even in my journal here, I've written that I'm going to die just as an animal dies. Is there really any difference? Is there really any difference? I'm not the only one that has thought this way that has been around for a while. Let me read you some words from a very bright and wise man. What a tremendously honest revelation of the ignorance of men in the face of life as it really is. Listen to this bewildered cry from U Thant when he was Secretary General of the United Nations. Speaking before some 67 distinguished scholars and statesmen from 19 countries of the world, convened before an audience of 2,500 people to talk about the requirements for world peace, this is the question that he asked. What element is lacking so that with all of our skill and all our knowledge, we still find ourselves in the dark valley of discord and enmity? What is it that inhabits us or inhibits us from going forward together to enjoy the fruits of human endeavor and to reap the harvest of human experience? Why is it that for all of our professed ideals, our hopes, our skills, peace on earth is still a distant objective seen only dimly through the storms and turmoils of the difficulties of life? Very bright man, addressing some very bright people, lamenting and asking the question, why can't that which is crooked be made straight? You know what he's saying? After all of these years of human history, we haven't been able to fix it, and we don't like not being able to fix it. With all of our professed ideals, all of our knowledge, all of our skills, life on earth is still a distant reality when it comes to the subject of peace. There are still wars and rumors of wars. This man has come to the same conclusion that I've come to. It's all vanity. It's senseless. What good is it? You know, I use an illustration to drive home this point sometimes, and I think it sort of speaks to the matter. So listen carefully, particularly for those of you that may have lived a while, a little bit longer than the graduating class. A couple hundred years ago, a man goes down to catch a stagecoach, and he finds that he just missed the stagecoach. So he goes up to the ticket agent, and he says, when's the next one? And the agent says, well, the next one's going to be in 2 weeks. He goes, 2 weeks? He goes absolutely ballistic. And he storms off, cursing all the way. But you see, Americans do not like anything that hinders progress or a good life. And so we're going to fix it. We're going to fix the stagecoach situation. And so we're going to invent the locomotive. And the son of the man that wanted to get the stagecoach, his son doesn't have to worry about a stagecoach. He goes down to catch the locomotive, only to find that he just missed it. And he walks up to the ticket agent and says, when's the next one? The ticket agent says, not for 2 days. He goes, 2 days? He goes absolutely ballistic. And he storms off. But you see, Americans don't like that. We're a people that can fix it. We can take that which is crooked and make it straight. And so we invent the plane. And so the man who missed the stagecoach, his son, caught a train, and his son is now going to catch a plane. He goes down and he finds out he just missed it. He goes up to the ticket agent and he says, when's the next one? Well, I think I can get you on the next flight to L.A. in 2 hours. He goes, 2 hours? I can't wait 2 hours. I got a business deal. And he storms off to the Starbucks airport coffee shop, and he orders himself a cafe latte. He sits down, opens up his laptop, downloads a movie, puts on his Bose noise-canceling headset, steaming the entire time. But you see, his son doesn't have to worry about any of that travel. Doesn't have to go to work every day, bumper-to-bumper traffic, because Americans don't like that. So we've now come up with a computer so you can work at home. And so his son works at home. He rolls out of bed. He goes over to his computer to see how his business is doing. He turns it on, and there are a number of things he has to download, and it says approximately 2 minutes for download. And he says, I hate this slow connection. I want to put my fist to the screen. He's sitting there fidgeting over waiting for 2 minutes. He can hardly stand it. From 2 weeks to 2 days to 2 hours to 2 minutes, all that wisdom has done a lot for us, hasn't it? We're as mad as we've ever been. Nothing has changed, young people, nothing. And your cell phones and your computers are only going to get faster and faster, and you're going to be just as angry as the guy that missed the stagecoach. And so you're wondering, when are we going to get this guy off the stage? this is not exactly a delightful talk at a commencement exercise. Oh, I simply want to warn you about life. I've been through life. I know what life is about. You see, I can remember when computers came out, and I remember how wonderful it was because I worked an 8-hour day, and I was told that now that computers were out, I'd work a 4-hour day. I'm now working a 12-hour day. You see, that which is crooked really can't be made straight. I've written it in my journal here. It's vanity. It's chasing after the wind. The next thing never does do it. But I thought it would. I really did think it would. And for those of you that are a little bit more scientifically inclined, let me throw something out to you. Anyone that knows anything about theories and hypotheses and scientific terminology knows that for anything to be true in science, it must be observable and repeatable. If it's not observable and repeatable, it's never going to become a law in science. If you throw a ball up in the air and it comes down, you can't say law of gravity. Maybe the next time you fill it up, it'll go into outer space. But we know it doesn't. We know every time we throw something up, it comes down. Therefore, it's observable and repeatable, it becomes a law. You know what's observable and repeatable? That no matter what we do with our wisdom, nothing ever really changes. The anger doesn't change, the bitterness doesn't change, the fighting, the feuding, the wars, the rumors of wars, with all of our technology, with all of our knowledge, with all of our skill, Uthant is crying out, lamenting, asking the question, can anybody out there give me an answer as to why we haven't arrived at world peace? Why isn't life happy? So I'm simply taking part of his address and giving it to you. He's just one more person on the planet that's come to the very same conclusion that I've come to. It's all vanity. It's chasing after the wind. Now, I know some of the faculty and some of the parents right now are getting a little edgy. Remember what I said at the beginning? Wait till the conclusion of the matter. We will get there. We will get there. Hard things must be said in order to arrive. I care for your sons and your daughters that are graduating. I care very much that they have a life that I believe I would want them to live. The second thing I want to address is this. I want to talk about wealth. Maybe I ought to tell you just exactly how wealthy I am. You know who Bill Gates is, and you know who Warren Buffett is, and you know many of the oil sheiks around the world. I am wealthier than all of them combined. This university has billions of dollars in endowment funds, and looks like a pauper in comparison with what I have and what I own. And many of you are waiting to hear what I have to say about wealth. It's your dream. You've dreamed so long and hard, I'm going to finish these 4 years. I'm going to get that diploma. I'm going to get into that business world. I'm going to make my mark. I'm going to make my money. I'm going to have a home everywhere. I'm going to have the yacht. I'm going to have all the stuff. You'll never have as much as I have, never. But let me tell you what I've found out about my wealth. I have found out that the more that I keep getting it, the more other people want it. I have found out that the more I get, the more relatives I didn't know about have all of a sudden surfaced. I have new friends that I never knew about. The more I get, the more frivolous lawsuits come my way. So now I have to have lawyers, plural, on retainer. The more I get, and the more I own, the more I realize I have to hire people to take care of all the things that I own. And then I have to have reports coming in from money managers and accountants and lawyers. And I've got to keep an eye on it. And that's all I can do. You know what I've learned? I wrote it right here in my journal. All I can do is keep my eye on it. I can't even use it. I don't have time. And you know what really bothers me? I'll see a laborer in one of my mansions, and I'll wind up talking to him as he's putting in some crown molding, and he's going to leave at 5 and go home to his family in a simple little apartment, and he seems to be happy, and I'm miserable. As a matter of fact, I wrote this in my journal. I find that I can't even sleep at night. You know why I can't sleep? Because I just heard that my home in Aspen had a flood. And I heard that two of my homes in the Bahamas have been ransacked and some burglars have come. I've got to get on the phone and handle this. And there's somebody after my, you know, my fortune in another part of the world, and I got to watch the stock market, and I'm frustrated just all the time. And so that, you know what I found out? I found out that this wealth, I wrote it in my journal, it's vanity. It's senseless. I can't take it with me. I can't do anything with it. When I die, it's just simply going to go to somebody else who didn't even earn it. Just frustrates me. So for those of you young people that think you're going to put your mark on the world, that's not one of the marks you want to put. If it comes your way, that's fine. But I certainly wouldn't strive for it. It's like striving after the wind. Once you get it, so what? So what? Here's my third point. We've talked about wisdom. And I've said that wisdom brings nothing but grief. We've talked about wealth. And I've said that wealth just, you can't even sleep at night. Now I want to talk about pleasure. I wrote right here in my journal, right here. It says, I've kept nothing from my eyes. Nothing. No pleasure has been kept from my eyes. None whatsoever. I have built vineyards. I've had more wine cellars than any king has ever had. I've had every single pleasure that money can possibly buy or afford. Everything. There's nothing I have withheld from my eyes. And you know what I've written in my journal? I've written in my journal that the ear is never filled with hearing or the eye from seeing. It always wants more. I don't get it. I can't figure this thing out. I always want more. I always think that once I get this, I've got it. But once I get it, I realize I don't got it. If your English prof is listening, he probably didn't like that. That's okay. Here's what I want you to understand. In your own life, parents, profs, maybe even some of you students getting ready to graduate, is it not true that when you bought that HD TV, you said, this is it? And you sat back and you said, look at how clear that is. You can see every fingernail on the guy when he's catching the pass. Whoa, look at this. Then all of a sudden there's an ad. They break for an ad. And they tell you about a new HD TV that's bigger, clearer, sharper, surround sound, surround smell, 3D. You look at your computer and say, what a piece of junk. Who bought this thing? Just spent $2,000. What a waste. And this new one's $4,000. I gotta get it. Chasing after the wind. Another one will come out. Another computer, another thing, another phone. Some of you are down there in the front texting right now. Come on, students, pay attention. Look up here. I have something to tell you. You see, all of this is just vanity. It's senseless. It's just chasing after the wind. I look down here. You talk about pleasure. The sensual pleasures of life, I've had 700 wives and mistresses. 700. I've found that it's just grasping after the wind. Nothing has brought me any lasting pleasure. There are things that I struggle with. And here's something you need to know before you even leave this university. There are other things that don't make a whole lot of sense to me. For example, sometimes I will see a prince walking while a pauper is riding on the horse. Sometimes I will see a person who has lived a good life but dies young, and a person who's lived a bad life lives long. I don't get it. I write these things in my journal, and I keep putting these things down. And here's some things you may have learned at this university, and I'm here to say I don't agree if you did learn it. Some of you have learned there's no such thing as absolute truth. Remember, wisdom is a skill for living. How are you going to know what is the truth if there is no absolute truth? And what about morals? What about morality? Is there any absolute morality? Some of you have been sleeping around in the time that you've been here at this university, and you think this is a great thing. And who's to tell you that's wrong? Am I to tell you it's wrong? Who am I? Do I have the ultimate standard? And if I did tell you it was wrong, you would simply say to me, Who do you think you are? Are you the final standard? Are you the moral standard? Until you walk out into the parking lot and find out that your new Corvette that your parents bought you has been stolen and busted up and found 2 miles down the highway in a wreck, and you're livid. And they find the thief, and you just can't wait to get everything out of him you possibly can. And he looks at you and says, "What'd I do wrong? Who says it's wrong to steal? Who are you? Are you the ultimate authority?" Young people, you better be thinking these things through. You're going to face all these things in life. There must be some sort of a standard. There must be someplace. Who's to say what it is? You see, all these things continue to play on our minds, and we struggle. And so I continue to write in my journal. I write more and more thoughts. Here's one. I've learned that in life, because execution against an evil work is not done speedily, it is therefore fully set in the hearts of men to do evil continually. Meaning that if we don't see justice taking place quickly, then somebody just winds up in jail for years and years and years and years at my expense. And then, you know, a sharp lawyer comes along and gets them out, and nothing seems to make a whole lot of sense. There never really seems to be any real justice, just due process. And I can't figure it out. And it drives me crazy, but it's what I've seen. I'm frustrated with so many things. And the reason I tell you all this, particularly you young people, is because if you're entering life and you have all of these expectations that you've been told, this is going to happen and this is going to happen, you see, the difference between your expectations and the line of reality is disappointment. And if you think you've got it all under control because you've got a 4-year diploma from this great university, go talk to your parents. Sit down. Have a nice talk with mom and dad. "Hey, dad, life turned out the way you thought it would?" You might say, very small percentage would say, "Yeah, better." But then the last chapter still hasn't been written. And even so, he's still going to die just like the fool. But most will not say that. Most will say, "No, I really thought that my career would have gone differently. I had no idea that I was going to get laid off because of this recession. Dad, how's the marriage? Hey, mom, how you guys doing? This is what you thought when you walked down the aisle? You know, I've seen a lot of fighting in our home through the years. I don't get it. I thought everything was going to be happy. Life turned out the way you thought? How's it working? How about you professors that are here that have taught these students? Come on, come on. Some of you are thinking, a lot of my papers didn't get published. I thought they would. And the man sitting next to me, his papers did get published. He's got a book out, New York Times bestseller. And I'm jealous. Life didn't work out the way I thought. And now he's on the speaking tour everywhere, making tons of money, but he's never home. And his kids are mad. And his wife's upset. Whole thing of life, what a joke. What an absolute joke this whole thing is. I know some of you are getting very upset. I see the parents. I see the raised eyebrows. You're thinking, is this guy going to bring this to some kind of a conclusion? You've put a damper on everything here at graduation. Why do we invite you? Because I'm the wisest man that has ever lived. And I'm the wealthiest man that has ever lived, and I've experienced more pleasure than anybody that has ever lived. And you want to find out everything about that. Because that's the American dream. It's the dream. And I'm here to tell you what I found out. I found out that wisdom brings lots of grief. That all my stuff, somebody's got to keep an eye on it. I've found that pleasure doesn't bring anything. I simply want more. Just never, ever, ever seems to work out. And so, I simply don't want your children, the graduating class, to go through all that I've been through and then find out the final conclusion of the matter late in life. I want them to find out the final conclusion of the matter early in life. I want all of you to find out the conclusion of the whole matter, which we're getting to in a moment. But I have something else I want to address. There are several other things that I need to address, and I can't say for sure that I know every faculty member has ever said this or taught this to the students, but somewhere along in life you've been told this. And I trust you've been taught how to reason here and think. I wonder if you've ever been told this. What your mind can conceive, you can achieve. You ever been told that? Ever seen that on TV? You know, you can do anything that you want. You're an American. You can achieve anything if you work hard enough, you put your mind to it, if you think about it, if you follow your dream. Stop and just think about that statement. How many people have said to themselves, I'm going to be president of the United States because my mind has conceived it and I've been told that I can achieve it? And how many people actually become president? Just one at a time. You know how many people didn't become president? Millions. And particularly those that wanted it bad. It didn't work out, no matter how much their mind conceived. Millions of people thought about it when they were in high school. I cannot wait. I'm going to be president. And you can't even be voted secretary by the student council at your high school. Disappointment. I'm going to be the CEO. I'm going to head up a company. 10 years later, you're still in the stock room, trying to figure out what went wrong. You thought that you could make that which was crooked straight. You got it all figured out. Doesn't work that way. I've written so many things here, so many things here. I think of the dream that so many young people have, particularly when they hit high school, they're on a football team. They think they're a pretty good quarterback, and they can picture in their mind that they're going to wind up getting drafted into the NFL. They're going to wind up, because they're so good, they're going to take their team to the Super Bowl. And they're going to be the ones with all the confetti coming down, having won the Super Bowl, and they can picture in their mind them holding up the Lombardi Trophy. MVP. They've conceived it in their mind. Do you know how many people get the Lombardi Trophy every year? One. You mean to tell me that what the mind can conceive, it can achieve? Millions of people want that. Millions. They didn't get it. And then the one that does get it, you know what he wants? Another one. It just goes home and collects dust. I got to have two. I got to have three. No matter how many. It's all vanity. Doesn't work. Doesn't cut it. He's going to die just like the person that never played 1 hour of football. What the mind can conceive. How about this one? You undoubtedly study this. I put this in the margin of my journal here. You've heard the expression from Invictus, I'm the master of my fate and I'm the captain of my soul. Have you heard that? Sure, you've heard that. You've heard it many times. Are you really the master of your fate and the captain of your soul? Really? Why don't you go talk to some people in Japan that in their minds, they had conceived of a great business. In their minds, they had perhaps read Invictus. In their minds, they thought they were the master of their fate and the captain of their soul. And all of a sudden, one day, some water came up out of nowhere called a tsunami. Boom. Lost everything. Radioactive material everywhere. Lost it all. What happened to becoming master? How about the people a few years ago that saw real estate as the place to invest your money? Buy as many homes as you possibly can. And then all of a sudden the recession hit. And you have, you know, these upside down mortgages and all these problems and you can't finance it and you find yourself in bankruptcy. What happened to that conceiving and achieving? What happened to that becoming master of your fate and the captain of your soul? How about all the people on the Gulf Coast last year before, that had bought, you know, hotels and motels and fishing businesses and finally got that yacht they've always wanted that they can take people out on tours and, man, this is the place. This is the place where people are going to come. They're going to come down here. They're going to love it down here. And then one day this dark sludge rises to the surface out of the ocean and it washes ashore and washes every dream that they ever conceived of, didn't get achieved. Didn't happen. It's all gone. Vanity of vanities. Go down and tell them about being the master of your fate and the captain of your soul. You're not the master of anything. You're not the captain of anything. You're kidding yourself. And some of you are thinking, when is he going to get to the happy part? Is there a happy part? Is there a place here? Here's another one. Oh, I love this one. This is the one that's being stated all over the United States right now at commencement exercises. Here's the message. Your generation is going to change the world. You've been waiting for me to say that, haven't you, class? Graduates, 2011, you're waiting for me to tell you that you're the generation that's going to change the world. You know what? I was told that at my graduation, and we changed nothing. You'll be lucky if you can change a tire when you get out of here. Or some diapers. You're at the bottom of the food chain. Get over it, all right? No generation has changed it. Remember the observable and repeatable thing I said a while ago? It's observable and repeatable that no generation has changed anything. You know what I have in my notes? You know what I have in my journal? That the sun comes up and the sun goes down. That water goes into the ocean, but the ocean is never full. That the circuits of the wind just keep twisting back and forth and return where they were from before. Life is one great big bore. It's like being on a treadmill going absolutely nowhere. 5,000 years of recorded human history show that no generation has changed anything. The stagecoach illustration tells it all. And you can take that illustration anywhere you want, however you want to apply it. Nothing ever really changes. Oh, we may live a little bit longer. There are cosmetic changes, but they're not real changes because the heart still isn't right. You know, years and years ago, G.K. Chesterton, who's a famous theologian, I think it was the London Times that said, answer this question. They put it out there for everybody. They said, what's the problem with the world? And Chesterton wrote in, me. I'm the problem. It's not the technology. It's not the stagecoach. It's us. We're the problem. Now listen carefully, class, to this brilliant statement. Wherever you go, there you will be. And you're the problem. You're the problem. It doesn't make any difference where you go. You're going to be there. You're not going to like the person working next to you in the cubicle. You're not going to like your boss or the people under you. Wherever you go, you're going to be there. And we're talking about bringing in world peace and everybody's going to get along. Listen, you can't even get along with you. You don't even like you. You're just not your type. Come on, get a life. Everything I'm saying is true. You know it. Faculty, you know it. Parents, you know it. Students, you need to know it. You see, we're the problem. And when the problem tries to solve the problem, that's a problem. And that's why this world is in the condition that it's in. You're not going to fix it. You're not going to make that which is crooked straight. Yeah, I'd like to tell you, you are. But generation after generation have heard the very same commencement speech year after year after year. It's just drivel. Doesn't mean anything. Everybody just goes right out there and does their own thing and nothing changes, no matter how hard people want to believe. You know, actually, everything is really downhill. I hate to tell you that. It's sort of downhill because this is sort of the best anything's ever going to be for you. Because now you're going to start aging. You're going to want to get that perfect job. And it's not going to work out. So the next job is going to be the perfect job. And then you're not going to get along with that person there. And all these different, you're going to be thinking, wait, what happened to my dream? What happened to all the things that I'd conceived in my mind? What happened to me being the master of my fate and the captain of my soul and me changing everything? What happened? We're going downhill. You know, some of you that took science classes learned about the law of thermodynamics, the second law of thermodynamics, which means that everything tends to decay. Unless you put energy into the system. This auditorium here, if we don't put energy into the system, it'll rot. The second law will take over. The second law takes over in every area. Every area. You got to put energy into a marriage to make it work. You have to put energy into your friendship to make it work. You have to put energy into life. And yet, 5,000 years of recorded human history, mankind has put tons of energy into this so-called system to fix it. And Uthant said it so well. It's a mess. It ain't fixed. There's something wrong. There's something fundamentally wrong. And I'm only here to tell you that it does go downhill. The second law does work. we're far worse off than the people that came before us. You're saying, how could you possibly make such a statement? Look at how our medical technology, look at how fast we can travel, look at all the things that we have. Come on, how could you possibly say that? I can say it because it's true. Let's go back to the pyramids. Nobody knows how they made the pyramids. They didn't have electricity. They didn't have gas-powered engines and caterpillars and all these things that could come in there and move it. They couldn't do it. But they did it. The largest pyramid, I think, has 2.5 million 5,000-pound stones in it, all perfectly laid, perfectly placed at a 17-acre base. What about Stonehenge? Huge stones that weigh 40 tons, carried from 240 miles away from Wales into England. How'd they do it? Nobody knows. Nobody knows. Easter Island and those huge figures on Easter Island. How about the enormous stone that the Mayan Indians moved that weighed 50 tons, taken from one mountainside, carved out, and brought through a river and hauled up to another mountain and placed in place? You know how much we can lift today? The best crane we have can lift 18 tons. Primitive people? No. And please don't tell me these were from outer space, people that came in and did this. Spare me, all right? The people of the past, far wiser, far stronger, far more knowledgeable, and you say, that can't be true. Look at us. Let me give you an illustration. Let's go back to your gym class in high school. Remember those pyramids you used to build? Those human pyramids? You get about 10 guys down the bottom, and then you 9 guys, and 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, and then you got a guy at the top. And he stands up and he says, I am the greatest. I am the tallest. He's only the greatest and the tallest in accumulated height, not actual height. It's always the smallest guy that's on the top. It's the big bruisers that are down on the bottom. Go back in history and look at what people have achieved in their reading, their science, their knowledge, without all the stuff we have today. We've simply built on the back of giants. It's going downhill fast. And you're thinking, going downhill fast, could you speed up your message? Man, this is bad. I came in here happy, looking for a wonderful graduation, and look what you've done. You've destroyed the whole day. You've ruined everything. Well, I hope not. I hope I can come to a conclusion. Because I do want to get to the conclusion of the whole matter. I've told you about wisdom, and all it does is bring grief. I've told you about money, and all it does is just keep me up at night. I've told you about pleasure. All I do is want more. I'm always grasping after one more thing. You know, I wrote in my notes, I wrote here in my journal, that eternity is written in our hearts. You know why we're always striving after one more thing, trying to stay alive longer? There's something in us that says, I'm an eternal being. Now some of you are getting very nervous. Where's he going with this? Just wait till I get to the conclusion of the whole matter. But you know deep down inside there is something that is causing you to want to find this utopia. It's almost as though you were made for it. Made for another place. Uh-oh, where's he going? Where's he going? I will give you the conclusion of the matter that you've been waiting for. Here is the conclusion of the matter. With all of my years, with all of my wealth, with all of my wisdom, with all of my pleasure, I have come to this conclusion that we are to fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Stay in your places, faculty. I mentioned God at a secular university. And you're thinking, we get federal funding here. This goes against the First Amendment. You violated the First Amendment, which talks about the separation of church and state. Go back and read the First Amendment. Separation, church, and state is not once mentioned there. More foolishness, more senseless talk. So listen very, very carefully to what I have to say, because I have the platform, and you've invited me to come and speak. I'm now going to explain to you this. I'm going to explain to you this simple fact. We've talked about chasing after the wind. Life is vanity. You can't make that which is crooked straight. And I think I've made my case. Hope I have. But we've talked about all of this is under the sun. Under the sun. You're puzzled by that. Let me tell you what under the sun is. Under the sun is believing that what I can conceive, I can achieve. Under the sun is thinking I'm the master of my fate and the captain of my soul. Under the sun is thinking the next generation is going to fix it. That's what under the sun means. Under the sun is man with all of his human wisdom and knowledge trying to make that which is crooked straight. And after all of these years, what have I brought to your attention? It ain't straight. It's a mess. And it's only getting worse. Statistics show that my generation, when I was growing up, much happier than the generation today. But we have much more. I thought that the increase in knowledge, which is at an exponential rate, and knowledge is designed to solve problems, problems should be going down at an exponential rate. They're going up at an exponential rate. I call that the ultimate contradiction. How do you figure that out? I've said over and over again that life is futile, senseless, worthless. Makes no sense at all. But you see, and listen carefully to the wisest person who ever really did live. His name is Jesus, and he never said those things. Just relax, folks. Just sit back, parents, staff, faculty, students. I don't care where you are with your beliefs. Listen carefully to what I have to say, because you've asked me to come, and I'm here to tell you what I've learned through life. I learned it kind of late, but I've learned it. I've learned this. C.S. Lewis said, "That which is not eternal is eternally out of date." You know you were made for eternity, and you know there's something wrong. And Jesus never said life is vain, and all labor is vain, and wisdom is vain. Never said anything like that. Jesus actually said, "I've come that you might have life and that you might have it abundantly." But he did not mean pleasure and wisdom and wealth. He meant that we might have a right connection with the one who is above the sun, so that life would make sense. And through all the turmoils and strife and difficulties of life, there would be an eternal connection to the sovereign creator God of this universe. And then and only then does life make sense. Up to that point, it's just vanity of vanities. Some of you here are struggling. Some of you philosophers, some of you sociologists, some of you parents, you come from a different background. But you know deep down that what I've said is true regarding what is written in your heart. You know something isn't right. You know things didn't turn out the way you thought. You want a better life for your children. You really want a better life for your children? I would encourage you to call upon the Lord Jesus Christ that you might be saved. It will not guarantee riches or wealth, but it will guarantee you this, that in the hardship of life, God's grace will be abundant to see you through it. Because when hardship comes, you won't look at life as a certain amount of sand falling through an hourglass. You'll see eternity, all of it. And this life and all of its pain and all the things we can't make right, just passing, just passing. You see, as soon as you come to Christ, you become a pilgrim in this world. Now, I've said some hard things today, and I told you in advance I was not going to tell you what you wanted to hear, but what you need to hear. So let me take a moment to address the faculty. I wouldn't for a second want you to think that you've spent all these years absolutely wasting your time on these students. Certainly you've given them some skill for living, and I commend you for that. There's no doubt that you have. But ultimately, they're still going to die, and so will you. Ultimately, much of what you have taught them is just for a while. It's not connected to that which is eternal, which means it's eternally out of date. But I do commend you for the time you've spent. And for you parents, you've done everything you can to pour in the lives of your children. But they need more than just you. They need more than just a good faculty. They need more than just a good university and a great education. They need Christ, and so do you. Because you see, under the sun, life just doesn't make any sense at all. U Thant said it so beautifully. With all of our skill, with all of our knowledge, why is peace on earth still a distant reality after 5,000 years of recorded human history? Would somebody give me the answer? I'm here to give you the answer. You can't fix it. You'll never fix it. No generation will fix it. No amount of wisdom will fix it. No pleasure will fix it. Only Christ can make it right. And he will. He will straighten out everything that is crooked in the new heavens and the new earth. And some of you are getting a little more interested right now. You're thinking, okay, all right. Yes, I'll admit. Life hadn't turned out the way I thought, and I'm struggling. So what is the answer? The answer is this. I have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, and so have you. You have not kept God's law perfectly, and the new heavens and the new earth, where God is going to dwell forever, is a perfect place. Therefore, you and I can't enter in because of our imperfection. But when you put your faith in Christ and Christ alone, he will have taken your sin, put it on himself, and taken his righteousness, his perfection, and placed it to your account. You therefore will be able to enter into his kingdom, even this very day, and ultimately into his final kingdom forever. Life will have its struggles. It will have its difficulties, but you'll see it very differently. You'll see that there's an abundance to life even under the sun, because ultimately you're actually living above the sun, because you'll have a whole new dimension, a whole new understanding. And so I close with these thoughts. First of all, I want to thank all the parents. I know I've been hard, maybe even a bit harsh, but I had to set a background. To the faculty, I thank you. I know I've been hard, a bit harsh, maybe a bit sarcastic, but I had to get your attention to understand that I don't want to tell you what you want to hear. I want to tell you what you need to hear. And then I want to say to the students, I want to say this. As I would say to the parents and the faculty and everyone, you need Christ, or nothing really makes any sense. It's just temporal. It's just, this is it. This is all there is. So for the graduating class, I commend you for this day's graduation. I commend you as you're going to come up here in a few moments and receive your diploma. But the ultimate diploma that I hope you'll receive when you die is well done, thou good and faithful servant, as you stand before the only one true God. And now today, you know what real wisdom is.